Welcome to part two of our conversation with Jimmy Pettinito about the darkest cases. Was it only playing backwards at that house at that time? Like, if you were to pop that tape into a cassette player today, should you find one, what would it be playing? Would it be playing? Did you have times where it played normal?
I don't even want to check, Tony.
I understand that. I'm just asking if at any point in time in the past did you ever have an occurrence where it did play forward?
I probably did, but I don't remember, honestly. And yeah. I'm not even going to chance it.
What I'm wondering about it is, and I'm not saying, hey, let's go grab the tape and press play, see what happens. What I'm wondering about it is if the audio itself was, if the tape itself is playing in the correct direction, but if the audio was somehow reversed on it. And I'm saying this in a way where, you know, some sort of force did this, just as an EVP would be picked up sometimes on a cassette tape, not audible to the ears, but somehow the audio ends up on the tape. If whatever it was that was at that house took that audio and just reversed it back magnetically onto the tape, and that's why you're hearing what you were hearing. That's what I was trying to get to. Just wondering kind of what did it do to this tape to make it play that way? You know, is it literally the tape in reverse, or is the audio physically changed?
That's really interesting. And maybe we can get that. We'll put that on a list of things to do. I would like an answer. Even if it's not what I want to hear, I'd rather know the real story.
It's a very interesting concept. I mean, it's almost spookier if it wasn't just the tape malfunctioning, but if the audio itself had been magnetically lifted off of it and then
reversed.
That would be very spooky. So obviously this is something that was dark in that home. I know the word demon and all that gets overly thrown around these days. I'm not wanting to jump to that all the time, but I know you have been involved in many cases specifically where that was what was happening, including cases with Father Malachi Martin. I'd love to hear some of those stories.
Before I get to that, I want to finish this one because there's a good twist at the end that I totally forgot about.
Yeah.
So normally, you know, when you just like, I guess the police, you know, they keep interviewing a suspect over and over again to see if they trip up or give you some information you didn't know before.
Sure.
So, you know, usually with especially these kind of cases, like what happened that all of a sudden this activity started in your house? Do you have a new item in the house? Did you make new friends? Did you make an enemy? Mm-hmm. Somebody died? Like, what happened that all of a sudden this started? Usually there's some kind of answer, you know. So maybe the third interview of the family, the dad says to the boy, he goes, why don't you tell him what you did? The 14-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
So remember I said they had family in Florida. They visit every so often, and the 14-year-old would, you know, go play with his cousin. So the boy told us a story about how they were riding their skateboards around town. It was night, and the cousin told him, this is the one that committed suicide. He goes, we're going to do something really cool tonight. So he goes along with them, and he goes, they go to it's kind of a wooded area, and it had a big clearing. And they said, he goes, just watch. So a bunch of his friends met there. I guess they planned this thing. And he goes, they stood in a circle, they put robes on, and they're doing some kind of chanting. They brought out a goat that was tied to a tree in the woods. They did something terrible to the goat's head. Mm-hmm. I won't say in detail. They said they put the goat in the middle of the circle while they're doing this. And he said, as that happened, a yellowish white beam of light shot up straight in the air from where they were. And he goes, they did this chant, chant, chant thing. And then he goes, after it was all over, the cousin looked at him and said, wasn't that cool? And I still don't know if the boy really participated in it or was watching, because I don't think the father would be too happy if he admitted that he was participating in the ritual, because he's very strict.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he participated or was just a witness, but all the activity kind of happened after that incident. So.
Yeah, it's almost like that might have been the catalyst to open those doors. Let's talk about, like I was just asking, about where things started to continue to escalate with other cases, where things were demonic, exorcisms were needing to be performed. Let's start out with your first interaction, how you were introduced to the Father Malachi Martin.
Well, this is another weird story. I'd never seeked out. Is that a word? Seeked? I never seeked out to do this sort of thing.
Sure.
And now I just 2 weeks ago, I assisted in my 50th exorcism, and I'm not of a home, of a person. Mm-hmm. I'm on 50. And, we were investigating a home in Massachusetts, and it was just a typical haunting, scratchings on the wall, whispering in their ear, knocks, little things, you know. So we went up there to interview the family, and it was just a man and a woman. They were really young. They were probably only 20 years old. It was the first apartment. It was a whole house, actually. They rented the house. And while interviewing them, we're like, we didn't know if it was the house they moved into, or like we didn't know any history of the house. It was hard to figure out what's going on. So the girl said, because I had some weird things happen to me when I was 13 years old. No, actually, she was only 18 at the time, I remember now. But when she was 13, she had some weird things happen to her. And we're like, what? So she was, I actually have tapes of them. So her mother came over and showed us all these tapes of when the girl was 13 years old. She'd be like laying in bed, and her arm would like get, it looked like, just picture like an unseen hand pulling her arm in the air and twisting it back and forth, like rapidly, twisting her arm, twisted enough in the air. She's just, her arm's right in the air, laying in bed, and her arm's like it twisted until she actually broke bones in her hand and wrist.
Oh, wow.
There's other videos, of her, it looks like somebody's holding her by the wrist, and she's getting thrown back and forth in a room, like uncontrollably. There'd be videos of her just kind of crawling on the ground, just fainting, just laughing hysterically, like just crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. So they were doing this to document it, because obviously they thought it was something medical.
Sure.
You know? So they were recording all this to show the doctors, and the doctors really couldn't find any reason for this. Mm-hmm. They said they spent $10,000-$20,000 on specialists back then.
Yeah.
To help her out, and her activity stopped just as suddenly as it started. So it lasted about a year and then just went away. So we're figuring maybe just living in this house now kind of started the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, one of the members of our group suggested, you know, maybe we try an exorcism. And I remember her saying, she goes, I don't think I'm possessed or anything like that, but she was like, you know, I'm open to it. And we didn't think anything was going to happen either. Mm-hmm. We said, maybe it's connected. Who knows? So Bishop McKenna agreed to come to the house with us. And I recorded the whole thing, just because that's what I used to do back then. I recorded everything we did.
Sure.
And, we just had her sitting in a chair in the living room, and the priest started saying his prayers, and she started immediately acting up, like screaming and trying to go at the priest. So we put restraints on her arms and legs, you know, to keep her away. Mm-hmm. It lasted an hour or so. And she even said before, I don't think anything's going to happen. But anyway, ever since then, the exorcism, she's free of all symptoms and still's free. She sends me Christmas cards every year. Still, this is 25 years now.
Yeah. What was going through your mind when you first had that experience in front of you, when you were taking part in an exorcism, or at least being witness to one, initially, what was your thought process? Were you prepared for what was about to happen? Were you believing that that these things can be fixed through such a ritual or a task? Or tell me your thoughts on that at that moment in time for you.
I just, because of the experiences that I've had, I do believe in all this stuff.
Sure.
And I was not prepared for her reaction to the thing. I thought, you know, this priest say some prayers, then we go home. Mm-hmm. And then after the, she was so violent, and I remember at one point she looked at me, and her eyes looked completely different. And I looked at, you can see me on the video, look away. Like I was terrified. I thought she was going to make my head explode or something. Mm-hmm. And then, as soon as we got into the, car to go home. I said, can I say it first? And everybody's like, yeah. I said, holy mackerel. It wasn't the word I said, but
yeah.
Yeah. So that was the first exorcism I was ever involved with.
Yeah. I mean, that's got to be something. What was the most surprising thing to you that you walked away from that you weren't expecting when witnessing an exorcism?
Just an incident that was kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, like what was the thing that really made you shocked about it?
A lot of these things, when the people have like superhuman strength, or you know, they have an aversion to holy objects, but anybody could fake that.
Mm-hmm.
Having the strength, it's an interesting one, because we have a psychologist in our group who was explaining to us that, you know, when you hear the stories of suppose a mom's on the highway and her kid's underneath the car, and they get this super strength to lift up the car to save their kid.
Sure.
And they said that's from a rush of adrenaline. They said nobody's going to get that rush of adrenaline when they're willingly sitting in a chair just having a priest say prayers over them. They're not going to have that.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to have that kind of strength just from that.
Sure.
And but still, people could, you know. So the one thing that really the thing that freaks me out is that when they have knowledge of the unknown. One example is a girl we're working with right now in Germany, who had a previous exorcism in a neighboring country. I forget, because they can't do exorcisms in Germany anymore. Might have been in Belgium, but she was speaking fluently back and forth with a priest in like four or five different languages that she claimed she didn't know. She had knowledge of there was a bishop that was witnessing the exorcism. He wasn't part of it. He was just down the, you know, sitting far away from everybody. And she started making fun of the way he walked when he was a kid, because he had polio. Nobody knew that he had polio previously when he was a kid. Mm-hmm. The knowledge of the unknown, really, when I personally witnessed this, we were, we had a case from Virginia where I didn't know much about the case, except this woman's from Virginia, and she was coming to the church for an exorcism. And we used to come early and set up the altar for an exorcism. We used to get the chair, the restraints, anything the priest needed. We used to get it all ready for him. So me and there was a police officer in our group, and we got there first. So we're setting up everything. And you know, when you're in church, you know, all of a sudden you're like holy for the day. He's like, oh yeah, I got into a fight with my mom last night on the phone, and I said terrible things. I feel bad. I wanna, I've got to call her and apologize as soon as I get home from this. And that was it. It was just in conversation. So shortly after, the woman, you know, somebody picked her up from the airport, and she's sitting in a chair, and the priest does his exorcism, starts doing his exorcism. And halfway into it, she turns towards the cop and points at him and says, and you, the way you talked to your mother last night, that's disgusting. And then just went right back to the priest again. And that like scared me more than any, you know, I've been bitten and scratched and threatened, and that knowledge of the unknown scared me more than anything.
Have you ever feared for your own safety, or feared that some of these things, when you're witnessing another human being essentially being taken over by some unknown entity, you're that close to it? Does it run through your mind? Do you ever have the fear that this could happen to me in some way, shape, or form?
Honestly, yeah. Sure. You don't know if like, all of a sudden you're going to start acting up during these things.
Yeah.
Or bring something home with you. That's why I took a break after I had two daughters, and when they were, after about a year or so, I, you know, one was three and one was just born. I said, you know, I just took a break from this. I don't want a chance that anything happened in my house.
Yeah.
But I had I had an incident in my house. We're working on a voodoo case from New Haven. That was kind of odd. My car, which had never had any problems, would overheat driving to the woman's house and back from the woman's house, and never overheated anywhere else. Just but, like, I know when I'm going to visit this woman, my car is going to overheat. So this woman, we believe she was I think it was actually Santeria that she was that somebody put on her, but we just came back from her house, I remember, and it was another situation where I was laying in bed and was still, you know, I was going to bed. It was still fairly light in the room because we had the hall light on, so it wasn't pitch black. I could still see. And this black shadow, it was like a mask, like a cloud. I could see it in the hallway, and then it started coming into the bedroom, and then it started coming over me, over my head. It was huge. It was a shapeless blob. And I just remember I just put my head down and prayed and didn't look up till the morning. And then during all this exorcism stuff, when you close your eyes, I'd see these disgusting looking faces come zooming in at my face, mm-hmm. like from angles, and they could get close to my face and they turn away, like they go away from my. And I just remember that happened repeatedly a lot. So I don't know if that's your imagination or it's really affecting you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, at some point you really have to, you know, be careful about that. And I know there's certain things where people will say, well, if we do these certain things for protection, we're going to be good. But is there ever truly a foolproof way of 100% being bulletproof from these things?
I don't believe there's a way to be 100% protected. No, I have a story for another episode to tell you, but it's a crazy story from my childhood. That's I feel protected only because of what happened to me when I was really young. Mm-hmm. And but I still always worry when I'm getting involved with something like that.
And that's very understandable. Let's close with one more question about exorcisms. Now that you have been involved in more than 50 of them, this is obviously something that's not thrown around very readily or easily when it's done correctly. Let's do an exorcism. Obviously, we hear the word demon thrown around far too much than it really should be. But what is some of the majorly qualifying factors that require an exorcism of a person, not of a house, but of a person where you know this is not a mental illness, this is not someone putting us on, there is truly something going on here. When you're trying to identify a true legitimate case that needs this task performed, what are some of those things that you're looking for?
Some of the things you're looking for are if they're getting harassed or tormented, especially scratched or beaten. Mm-hmm. By some unseen force, if they have super strength, if they have knowledge of the unknown, if they have aversion to holy objects, like you said, if Uncle Jimmy's haunting you, and you put a cross on their forehead, they don't care.
Sure.
You know,
can a person be possessed by? When we hear possession, we often assume demonic, demons. Is that the true definition of a possession, where it is something otherworldly that is taking over? Or can a person be possessed by Uncle Jimmy and then suddenly have an urge to watch reruns of Seinfeld or whatever it may be?
Yeah, that's a $1 million question, because I'm working on a case right now for a documentary, mm-hmm. where this woman participated. Well, we think she participated in some kind of voodoo ritual that she didn't do voluntarily. Long story short, a woman was jealous of her at work, and then she invited her to a party, and they had her eat something or drink something. And ever since then, she's had things happen to her. Mm-hmm. And it was from their Day of the Dead celebration, where you invite the dead to come amongst the living and live with the living.
Yeah.
And she's talking in a different voice, a different dialect, different accent, saying that, that the person, inside of her is a human. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, can a person really inhabit another human, or is it always demonic? And I want to do further research on this before I answer that, because I'm sure most people would say no, a human can't, but I am still not sure.
As with anything in this world that we talk about, I think more times than not, we walk away with more questions than answers.
Yeah, exactly. When I was 25 years old, I thought I had the answers to everything. I could ask me a question and I'll tell you. And now it's like I know less than I did then.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Jimmy Pettinito about the darkest cases. A big thank you to him for joining us on the program today. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Follow me at Tony Bruschi on Instagram. Thanks for listening.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In The News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.